You're listening to the Liberty News Radio Network, and this is the Political Cesspool.
One bright and guiding light that taught me wrong from right, I found in my mother's eyes. She told that road all paved with gold I found in my mother's eyes.
Well, we probably should have played that song at the beginning of last week's show, being that last week was the night before Mother's Day, of course, last Sunday, but a better late than never, and still a reason to play it this week, and we'll get to that in just a moment. But welcome to tonight's live broadcast of TPC. I'm James Edwards. Keith Alexander back in the studio with a Saturday evening, May the 18th, and boy, do we have a show for you. First, it's great to be back with Keith. This is the first time since the last week of March that we'll be fully back to our standard routine here at TPC. Obviously, you know, we have the special series in April, all month. A couple of weeks ago, I was out. Winston did an expert job of commanding the show. Last week, Keith was out. But great shows all over the course of the last 6 weeks. Variety, after all, is the spice of life. Great show last week with Ted Pike. But what we've got for you tonight, I'm excited about. Mark Weber, the director of the Institute for Historical Review, he's going to be back on the show in the second hour to report on what he observed and learned during a recent two-week visit to Europe. And he's going to talk about the social, cultural, and demographic trends that are shaping the future of Europe and the West. Also, later tonight, in the third hour, stay tuned for the whole show tonight, Lana Lochtef of Red Ice is going to be on with a live report from the American Renaissance Conference. Lana actually just texted me as we were going on the air. She gave a speech this afternoon. We're going to find out what's going on at AMRIN. I heard that there were a few arrests made at AMRIN today, including, I believe, a member of the Antifa got roughed up by a horse.
They can't prosecute the horse like they could in Charlottesville. They had someone to prosecute. I want to see how the left handles this.
We'll find out, and maybe Lana can give us some insight onto that when she appears in the third hour. But my mother's eyes. So happy belated Mother's Day, I guess we should be wishing. You know, one thing about mothers, none of us would be here without them. I was the beneficiary of having a wonderful mother. Keith, yours is still alive and kicking, I might add, still getting around like a spring chicken. How old is your mom?
92.
92 years old, and she can outpace me just about. And I know Keith is a dutiful son, and he sees her, what, every day? You eat with her about every night, don't you?
Don't eat with her, but I visit her and take her out for a ride or, you know, watch television, do something.
All right. Well, good enough. And again, happy belated Mother's Day to all the moms out there. There are going to be a few more mothers in Alabama if this law is allowed to stick. And that is our first topic of discussion tonight. You know, the guests that are forthcoming, we have got some very interesting topics for the first hour, current events. But I want to start by spending a little bit of time on this Alabama pro-life legislation. There's a few things about it that I don't think are getting national attention, but should, and so we're going to give it that treatment here. Very first off, though, with regard to the topic of abortion is murder. I mean, to me, it's absolutely clear. It's murder, cut and dried. But the right to life issue is not my biggest concern. I've talked about this before. It's immigration, and it's not even close. It doesn't matter what the law on abortion is, if we are allowed to be inundated with people from the third world who are invariably going to overturn those laws. Now, they've already been overturned because of murdering children has been the law of the land since 77, but none of it matters. You can pass any law you want. It's all going to be washed away with the onslaught of diversity. No conservative law will withstand multiculturalism. So, because they all vote Democratic, so we know that. So immigration is my first, second, and third priority. Now, with regard to abortion, I think it would be great if we lived in a homogenous nation, because in an homogenous nation, you would not have to worry about being raped. So I think that's the big thing that they are talking about with regard to this legislation that even Pat Robertson said was extreme was that it takes out the exceptions for rape and incest. We don't have to worry about incest so much. That really doesn't ever happen. I think it's 0.0001% of abortions are.
Of course, the left would have you believing that white Southerners, incest is part of the fabric of family life in every Southern family. But, of course, nothing could be further from the truth.
Well, and so if you just throw out the whole incest excuse. That isn't one that is used. I do want to focus on the thing with regard to rape. But before we do that, I want to say I am pro-choice insofar as a woman has a choice when it comes to whether or not she gets pregnant. I don't know how many women – I see all the women howling that you're taking away the woman's right to choose. No, you're not. A woman has the right to choose whether or not she engages in promiscuous, unprotected sex out of wedlock. But after that choice is made, she then, I think, in a civilized society, would have to be forced to live with the consequences of her action. That's called responsibility, and murdering a baby because you aren't disciplined should not be an option.
Of course, the movement in modern America and in the West generally is for no responsibility on part of women regarding sexuality in any way. For example, in the Me Too movement, you had sex 40 years ago. Your life has not turned out the way that you wish that it had, so you can come back and slander somebody like Roy Moore and say that he ruined your life. That's, you know, you can't even take responsibility for things that you did 40 years ago. So, you know, is it any surprise that there's a retreat from the idea that women have any responsibility whatsoever when it comes to sex?
All right. I said I want to talk about the issue of the rape exception not being included in this. And we're going to get to that. But let's just first unpack this for you in case you've not been paying attention to the news at all this week. Georgia passed. I talked with Sam Bushman about this on Wednesday on his radio program. I was a guest on Liberty Roundtable, libertyroundtable.com. We talked about the Georgia heartbeat bill, which was a pretty stout pro-life bill. Alabama, though, really is that's going to be the one that could challenge Roe versus Wade, they say. But here's the story. We'll get to the rape thing and my thoughts on it. But the Alabama Senate, I'm reading from the Associated Press, the Alabama Senate approved a measure on Tuesday that would outlaw almost all abortions in the state, setting up a direct challenge to Roe versus Wade, the case that recognized a woman's constitutional right to end a pregnancy. The constitutional right to murder your baby is the way I put it. The legislation bans abortion at every stage of pregnancy and criminalizes the procedure for doctors who could be charged with felonies and face up to 99 years in prison. It includes an exception for cases when the mother's life is at serious risk, but not for cases of rape and incest. Okay, go, Keith, your thoughts on this, and then we'll come back and unpack it a little more in the next segment.
Okay, I think that the whole bill is a red herring, that the left knows that they can get it defeated in court. It has such extreme positions. For example, the 99-year penalty for a doctor, that's not going to fly. No exception for rape or incest, that's not going to fly. So, again, they know that we on the right are so used to losing on these things that they didn't even try to craft a bill that had any reasonable prospects of not being struck down. It's going up like a straw man. It's going to be knocked over. And they're going to tell us, well, we tried, but folks, we just couldn't deliver. It's not our fault.
That's a recap, essentially, of what the bill is about. Now, I'm going to dig a little deeper. I gave a little bit of a teaser. I'm going to really fill in the blanks on my thoughts on why the rape exception, that not being included, is something that we need to consider in this degenerate day and age in which we live, and why it's so significant to me. A couple of reasons why. I'll tell you when we come back.
Have we realized the assault against our lives, our liberties, our faith? To defeat this assault, Christians and all people of goodwill should have strategies to prevail in our faith and principles, which are simple. No need for a complex formula. One goal. One aim. A strategy like the heroic Christians of the past. We win, they lose. Nothing less. Big Q, Little Q. The Calm Before the Storm by a friend of Medjugorje. The strategy of heaven revealed. Big Q, Little Q. The Calm Before the Storm. Available on Amazon.com. Or by calling Caritas in the U.S. at 205-672-2000.
I'd advise Mr. Trump to stop whining and go try to make his case to get votes.
The press has created a rigged system. They even want to try and rig the election.
Well, I tell you what, it helps in Ohio that we got Democrats in charge of the machines.
And poisoned the mind of so many of our voters.
At the polling booths, where so many cities are corrupt and voter fraud is all too common. And then they say, oh, there's no voter fraud in our country.
I come from Chicago. So I want to be honest. It's not as if it's just Republicans who have monkeyed around with elections in the past. Sometimes Democrats have too. You know, whenever people are in power, they're, you know, they have this tendency to try to, you know, tilt things in their direction.
There's no voter fraud.
You start whining before the game's even over. Whenever things are going badly for you and you lose, you start blaming somebody else. And you don't have what it takes to be in this job.
Hi, I'm Patty, wife of former Congressman Steve Stockman. In Congress, Steve sought impeachment of Eric Holder for his corruption of the Justice Department and his fast and furious gun running that caused Border Agent Brian Talley's death. Steve called for arrest of Lois Lerner for her contempt of Congress as it investigated her targeting of conservative nonprofit groups. After 4 years, four grand juries, and millions of tax dollars, Steve Stockman is in prison. His case involved four checks to nonprofits. DOJ has one standard for Hillary Clinton, but another for folks like President Trump and my husband. We've spent all our savings, all Steve's retirement, and much of mine. Steve Stockman has fought for you and America. Won't you join me now to fight for Steve? To help, text FIGHT to 444-999. Text F-I-G-H-T to 444-999 or go to defendapatriot.com. Defendapatriot.com.
It's time to jump back into the political cesspool. To be part of the show and have your voice heard around the world, call us at 1-866-986-6397.
I was excited to sink my teeth into this pro-life legislation out of Alabama because I think we're going to get into some insights here that a lot of other people, especially in the mainstream press, are not talking about.
On purpose.
If we lived in an ethno state, if we lived in the America of even the 1950s, where the demographics were what they were at that point,
90% white at that point.
I would say abortion should be punishable by death to the woman seeking it and the provider who performs the service. That I do think that abortion is murder. However, we do not live in a racially homogenous nation. And Alabama, especially, Alabama has a big problem with diversity, especially cities like Birmingham. God forbid a young white woman should get raped. But in areas plagued with multiculturalism, that is a legitimate concern. And if that happens, and for me, if that happens, under no circumstance do I believe she should be forced to have her rapist's baby. Now, she can choose to do so. I know there's some purists out there that say, you know, no exceptions. I'm sure that comes from a heartfelt position, but if it was my wife or daughter, under no circumstances would that happen. Now, that is what happens to a conquered people, where you have to have the offspring of your rapist. I'm an unreconstructed Confederate. That isn't the way that I would want it to go down.
That's the Huns and the Mongols, for example, raped all the captive women or the women of the tribes that they conquered.
Well,
so, you know, in other words... And that's what we're becoming more and more like, a conquered nation. For example, here in the South, the fact that they can take down our statues, Confederate statues, you know, the fact that they are able to take down our statues is a way of telling us that we're a conquered people. In other words, they own this town, Memphis, for example. We don't, the white people of Memphis, don't have any say about what's going on. And see, look at it from the other side. Do you think under any circumstances would a white leadership of a town like Memphis or Birmingham take down Martin Luther King Boulevard signs? Of course not, because we're considerate of the feelings of other people. On the other hand, our adversaries, racially, are interested in letting us know that we're no longer in charge and they are, and they can do anything they please.
And up into and including apparently rape. And so this is what I'm talking about, to put a fine point on it. If you have the demographics in America that you had 100 years ago, rape should be, you wouldn't have to worry about being raped. You would not have to be, there would be a few random rapes, obviously, a handful, but we know the statistics from the Department of Justice, from the FBI on who commits the rapes, and so because of that, I think you need to have the rape exception in that. That's my opinion. On the other hand, in the era of Me Too, who's to say what's a legitimate rape, and what's just another instance of a woman withdrawing consent a day later, a week later, a month later, a year later, or in the cases of Roy Moore 30 years later, or Kavanaugh 30 years later, and then pretending to have been raped because she gets scorned by some man that she has a bone to pick with. So, see, that's an issue, too. So I could see any woman who wanted to have an abortion just showing up, saying she was raped, and then everything going on as business as usual. And that's another problem you've got in this degenerate day and age, which is perhaps why they put the rape exception in there.
Well, it's also very easy, if you're in a blue state, for some woman who wants an abortion to claim that she was raped, and there'd be a wink and a nod on the part of the authorities, and she gets to abort her baby when it's really not a rape. On the other hand, in other areas, they're liable to have a big investigation, and the woman's liable to be facing jail time for making a false charge. But I can see where the proponents of this law would be dubious about claims of incest and rape, because what we've seen in the Me Too movement is that false accusations do happen, and they happen with increasing frequency in today's America.
Well, and it's like we said, too. Obviously, the war between the states settled the fact that the states do not have the autonomy and the rights that the Founding Fathers intended for them to have. So it's not as if Alabama can just pass this law and it's going to stand. So this is going to get overturned lickety-split by a circuit court, and then the Supreme Court may or may not take it. They don't even have to hear it.
Well, what they'll do, look, when the Federalist Society is the gatekeeper as to what conservatives can be considered for nomination and membership on the U.S. Supreme Court, you know they're going to be weak as grandma's iced tea as far as conservatism is concerned. I cannot see John Roberts or Brett Kavanaugh voting for this particular law. And, you know, if it's not going to happen. It's going to be a perfect example of when all is said and done, more will be said than done. This is a big talking point. This is a way that the Trump administration and other conservatives can say, we're really emboldened, we're going to make a big difference, and then they're going to say, oh, shucks. We couldn't do it, but folks, you got to give us an A for effort.
That's okay. We're here talking about the rape exception as if it's a conversation that's anything other than moot, because that's what a lot of people have picked up on, and it's certainly something that I picked up on. I love the fighting spirit of Alabama. I believe a lot of people behind this believe that it has a chance, and they're doing it for the right reasons. However, there is this whole argument that the conservatives really don't intend to win this fight to begin with. Even Pat Robertson, as I mentioned, came out against it. Some people made some interesting comments on Twitter. I'll just read a couple of them very quickly. One reads, I would take the Alabama abortion ban more seriously if it involved punishment for the woman seeking the abortion. It does not. That's sort of like my Uncle Richard. He's not my uncle. He was my great uncle, my grandmother's brother. He died on death row because he allegedly hired a hitman to take out one of his rivals. And Uncle Richard died on death row. The guy who actually did the murder rolled over on Richard and walked out scot-free. Now, Richard always said he didn't do it. If anybody's familiar with Richard Austin, if you're in Tennessee, you may be, because it was a pretty prominent case some years ago. I remember going up and visiting him, taking my grandmother up there to visit him in the penitentiary. And I loved Uncle Richard. Actually, he had a retrial in the 90s, and I was a character witness. I testified in that retrial, but it wasn't overturned. The conviction wasn't overturned. But anyway, this is what they're talking about. The person who actually commits the murder the woman soliciting it in this case is not punished. Politically, they say, I wonder if the GOP wants Roe versus Wade to be overturned. The abortion issue and the obsession over judges in the primary is the primary means of keeping whites, particularly Southerners and evangelicals, on the Republican plantation. Were that taken away, the Red Coalition would be in jeopardy. That's right. If they lose the abortion issue, they lose the only genuine grassroots element in their coalition. And so that's what the cynical side of me thinks. They are pushing incredibly unpopular and extreme abortion laws because they don't actually want to succeed in the courts.
Well, think about this. One of the senators from Alabama is totally opposed and aghast at this law. It's what's his name, Doug Jones,
who the one that they me too'd.
And if they had Roy Moore in there, and he should have been elected, if it had not been for a stab in the back from Ann Coulter and some other people, maybe he would have. If he had gotten, particularly Donald Trump, if Donald Trump had not stabbed him in the back, he probably would be there, and he would be the most consistent yes vote for everything on the Trump agenda that you could imagine if he were in there. We're not saying that that's wonderful from our standpoint, but Trump apparently doesn't know what side his bread's buttered on, and so do these other people. Doug Jones, you know, how could you allow somebody in a state like Alabama to get to elect a liberal Democrat to be a senator? It's mind-boggling the lack of political savvy that the Trump administration has, and that's Exhibit A for it.
Another little quip, better from their perspective, a Twitter commenter writes, to lose and keep collecting checks from the earnest evangelicals for another generation. We didn't quite win that time, but by God, if you keep sending us money and voting Republican, we're going to get them. We just need a little more time.
And we're strong as Garrett Snuff, folks. We are. I mean, you can tell by this bill, you know, the next bill will have the electric chair for the woman, too. So, you know.
All right, we're going to move on from this in the next segment, but it was interesting, and those were the reasons that I found it to be more interesting. Again, ultimately, I'm very much pro-life, but circumstances in Alabama especially make the rape exception something that I think should be considered to be put on the table. It's not a perfect world, is it, folks? We'll be back.
Exposing corruption, informing citizens, pursuing liberty. You're listening to Liberty News Radio. USA Radio News with Wendy King.
Missouri's governor says he will sign a bill passed by lawmakers which outlaws abortion after 8 weeks. There's no exception for rape or incest. Governor Mike Parsons says he supports it and will sign it.
Because it's a piece of legislation that the legislators voted on. I believe in the pro-life side of the issue, and I'm going to sign the bill.
Heavy rains, strong winds, large hail, and flash flooding are forecast across the plains and the Mississippi Valley. Meteorologist Allison Chinchar says a twister outbreak is also possible.
The tornado watch still in effect for portions of Texas as well as Oklahoma as a lot of those strong storms continue to push off to the east. Now, we will start to see those storms also begin to advance into states like Arkansas, Louisiana, portions of Missouri as well once we get into the afternoon and really into the evening hours.
This is USA Radio News.
Hi, this is Wayne Allyn Root, the Capitalist Evangelist. I'm here to introduce you to a special company with the potential to be one of the great all-American stories. Fortum Resources is a publicly traded, diversified natural resource company with oil, gas, and mining properties in North America and internationally. Fortum is led by Chairman Mark Bruner, the legendary oil man who built Ultra Petroleum from a 15-cent stock to $200 per share, creating $15 billion in shareholder profits. Mark has 30 years of experience in the oil and gas industry, overseeing contracts with Halliburton, ExxonMobil, and Hess. Fortum has over 350,000 acres of oil and gas resources, and more than half the acreage has been evaluated by world-renowned auditors Deloitte Touche. Fortum also owns the rights to the 180-square-mile City of Gold mining property. Fortum is traded on two global exchanges, U.S. ticker symbol FTMR. Repeat, FTMR. This is a rare ground floor opportunity to capitalize on a proven energy industry legend. Please visit FortumResources.com. That's Fortum, F-O-R-T-E-M, Resources.com.
The former vice president had his first campaign rally in Philly. More from USA's Rick Vincent.
Democratic presidential candidate Joe Biden calls President Trump America's divider-in-chief, saying let's stop fighting and start fixing. Meanwhile, he says China continues to move forward.
They're building 5G, mastering AI. They're rewriting the rules of the internet. They're moving into areas that should not be abandoned by us. The rest of the world hasn't given up on the Paris Climate Accord. They're pushing it. They know it's essential to human existence.
The U.S. is warning that commercial airliners flying over the Persian Gulf are risking being targeted by miscalculation or misidentification by the Iranian military. Tensions between the two nations is on the rise after the U.S. sent an aircraft carrier and bombers to the region over still unspecified threats from Tehran. You're listening to USA Radio News.
Welcome back. To get on the show, call us on James's Dime at 1-866-986-6397.
All right, we're going to move on. Just a last parting shot on this. I, like Brad Griffin wrote this week, I don't have any confidence that the so-called conservatives in the federal courts are going to sustain this law or overturn Roe versus Wade or anything like that. I just don't in my gut. I'd be happy to be proven wrong, but I just don't think it's going to happen. Now, one thing Candace Owens, the black activist, wrote this week, and I'll just present this. As a matter of fact, she writes that 62% of abortions in Alabama are performed on black women. Black women are only 7% of the population, but account for 40% of all abortions performed in America. So that's something that I think should be
and considered. And 13% of the population.
That's right. So something to be considered when thinking about all of this. Lastly, the whole thing about stare decisis, just keep very quickly. Now, they always say once a precedent is set, you have to, you know, just about do whatever you can to make sure the precedent is always upheld no matter what. And that's what stare decisis basically is, right?
Well, that is. But on the other hand, stare decisis is based on the presumption that any decision that's reached was reached by stare decisis. In other words, it was consistent with prior precedent.
I don't think they were looking for that in my case in Michigan, but...
Well, they certainly weren't. They certainly have varied from that, from Brown versus Board of Education forward. Nothing in the liberal transformation of America that started with the court system was based on any type of reasonable resemblance to the application of stare decisis. So really what we're going to have to do is get people that are so conservative on the court, they're going to call out things like Brown versus Board of Education as radical departures from stare decisis and go back to what the original precedents were. And quite frankly, I don't see that happening. It's certainly not going to happen if the Federalist Society is in charge of screening candidates. I guarantee you, Kavanaugh and Roberts are the new swing votes on the Supreme Court. They are not part of a new conservative majority, and people need to realize that.
We'll find out soon enough. I'll tell you, though, ultimately, instinctively, I would be for this law if for no other reason than looking at the people who are protesting it. I mean, I see here at the Alabama State House, it looks like a picture of a bunch of witches, like a coven of women there.
Looks like it could be the clergy in a typical Episcopal church nowadays.
Where well,
you
that's
a,
right.
Where you have a male who's like a wizard surrounded by a coven of witches. So,
well, these women dressed in their... witches garb, we dare defend our right to accessible abortion. And you can substitute the word abortion for murder. Murder is a human right, the human right to murder your children. All right, anyway, that's enough on that. I do want to talk about this because this is another big story. And we'll see where it goes. I mean, it's going to play its way through the courts, and we'll keep you updated here on TPC. Keith, this is rich. The SAT, the College Board now, is going to give adversity scores on the SAT to students who are disadvantaged. Now, when you hear the word disadvantaged, it's sort of like when you hear a story about a murder or a rape, and it talks about teens having committed
talk
it.
About a dog whistle.
Right.
The left talks about dog whistles. This is the original leftist dog whistle telling you
underprivileged, underprivileged or disadvantaged. You know what's going on.
No,
here.
No whites need apply for that type of status.
So they're going to be giving out basically free points on the SAT to students who come from certain social and economic backgrounds. So here's the story out of the.
And they will lie to us and tell you that white people from Appalachia, for example, will qualify for this. I tell you what, if you believe that, then let me talk to you after the show because there's a bridge in Brooklyn I'd like to sell you.
The College Board, this is from the Wall Street Journal, the College Board plans to assign an adversity score to every student who takes the SAT to try and capture their social and economic background, jumping into the debate raging over race in class and college admissions. The new number, called an adversity score, by college admissions officers is calculated using 15 factors, including the crime rate and poverty levels from the student's high school and neighborhood. Students won't be able to see the scores, but colleges will see the numbers when reviewing their applications. And to that, I responded by saying, why not just let all quote-unquote underprivileged, we're talking about minorities here, why not just let them all go to college and ban whites from college entirely? Why don't we just cut to the chase and be done with it instead of rolling out these nonsensical, preposterous measures like this, because there's never going to be equality when it comes to intelligence. No two people are equal. Nothing is equal. Intelligence, beauty, accomplishment, none of it's equal. So just give them whatever degree they want and just mail it to them and save everyone from having to participate in this farce, Keith.
Well, I'm old enough to remember what was told to the public to support passage of the 1964 Civil Rights Act, upon which affirmative action is based. And what they told us is no longer will race be a factor, it will all be done on merit. Well, that lasted for about 15 seconds, I think, after the passage of this law. The EEOC was created by the 1964 Civil Rights Act, which, by the way, was thicker than the Washington, D.C. phone book at the time it was passed. And what they have done with the EEOC is, in 1969, under the Nixon administration, so much for Republicans protecting the interests of white people, it was passed by the number two person. Guess what? He was Jewish, in the EEOC. And Alfred Bloom Rosen was his name. And that's been the law ever since. Affirmative action is the official policy, which is racially discriminatory against whites, racially discriminatory in favor of blacks in particular and non-whites generally. So why don't we go back to what they are originally sold us on, which is meritocracy. Well, they're not going to allow meritocracy. They're going to find some way to shoehorn in enough black people to assuage what they think is reasonable. And now, with our good friend Ivanka, Jared and Ivanka Trump, we have a new immigration bill where they're going to be bringing in highly trained and talented people from Asia and other places, India and stuff like this, so that they can have a merit system in which white people in America are again going to be on the soft end of the stick. They're going to try to bring in the best and brightest from overseas, excuse me, and give them the positions that otherwise would go to white kids. See, if we had a meritocracy, whites had no fear back in 64. They knew that they would do very well if we had merit as opposed to race-based admissions. But we were never allowed to have that. And now we have the Trump administration, the great defenders, dauntless defenders of white America, coming forward and saying, we got to get all these talented people. And meanwhile, we have an engineering school here in Memphis called Christian Brothers College. A lot of their graduates can't get jobs because the jobs that they would normally and naturally be qualified for are going to people from Pakistan, people from India, people from China. That's what they intend to do. They will do anything they can to prevent white people from climbing the ladder. They want that. Their mission as liberals is that white people in America are going to be like white people in South Africa, living in plywood huts without running water or electricity. Until that happens, their job isn't through.
Well, getting back to this whole adding points to select individuals on the SAT, instead of it being standardized, instead of it being merit-based, you're going to add points now to the privileged underclass or the undertow. And so the result, of course, is going to increase the number of unprepared students in college, leading to a lowering of college standards across the board, as well as the number of students who drop out. But of course, when the goal is absurd, the path to get there must also be absurd. And they've already lowered standards in education so much going back to, I think it's fitting, Keith, that this adversity score plan is being rolled out on the 65th anniversary of the Brown versus Board of Education decision, which lowered standards in public education, basically ruined public
education in places like Memphis and Birmingham for all intents and purposes.
Yes, it ruined it. But 65 years later, to the week, here's more of it. Forget affirmative action. We're just going to give it.
Well, you're going to give it to them, and it's a pinchers movement. On one hand, they're going to make sure that they get the number of black and Hispanic admittees to colleges that they want. Fairness and merit be damned, on one hand. And then on the other hand, they're going to bring in talented outsiders into America to take jobs away from talented white Americans.
And I don't know what racism is, Keith, because as you say, it's the definition itself is a moving target. It's everything, it's nothing. Depending on who you ask, you get totally different definitions. But what is racism if not selecting a group of people based on the color? Now they're saying it's
they've selected us out as Sam Goldwyn, the movie mogul, said, include me out. Well, apparently white people have been included out from any preferences or any capability at all of getting into highly selective colleges and universities.
Is this a form of reparations? I don't know, but we've got a little segment on reparations coming up.
Yeah, this is David in engineering.
This is your wife in suburbia.
Oh, hi, hon. What's up?
How's the robot coming?
Well, it doesn't exactly respond to requests yet, but I'm...
Well, I know how frustrating that can be.
You do?
Uh-huh. I'm still waiting for my romantic lunch date.
Oh, yeah.
David.
Well, I must not have enough memory allocated.
Uh-huh.
Sorry.
You know, your son said mama today.
Really?
Uh-huh.
Well, we'll have to have that sound chip changed to Dada.
Well, you could reprogram it yourself, you know.
I know. Hey, why don't we do it over lunch today?
Oh, you really are brilliant.
Thanks. You want me to bring the robot?
David.
He can order pasta in 11 languages.
Only if he pays for his own lunch.
Okay. Oh, don't forget to bring Chip.
I still wish we had named him that.
Well, why? It beats general default.
Oh.
Family. Isn't it about time?
Do you know that a baby processes information 3 times faster than an adult?
An adult what?
Engineer. Funny.
I'll see you at noon.
I can't wait.
From the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints.
Can a nation conceived in liberty carry its head high if it denies protection to the youngest and most vulnerable of its citizens? Can a country founded on God-given rights continue to thrive without understanding that life is a precious gift from our Creator? As a physician, I have looked into the eyes of 1-pound babies. I have cradled their small bodies in the palm of one hand. I defy those who are careless, who would disregard life and look at these tiny little miracles and say, we're not going to protect that.
But I believe there will come a time when we are all judged on whether or not we took a stand in defense of all life from the moment of conception until our last natural breath. One thing I promise you, I will always take a stand for life.
As a parent, is receiving a faith-based, character-focused education for your children difficult to find? Do you believe that godly principles should be a central component in your child's education? Imagine a school where faith and integrity are at its center, where heritage and responsibility instill character. For over 40 years, American Heritage School has been educating both hearts and minds, bringing out academic excellence. This is the school where character and embracing the providence of a living God are fundamental, where students' national test scores average near the 90th percentile. With American Heritage School's Advanced Distance Education Program, distance is no longer an issue. With an accredited LDS-oriented curriculum from kindergarten through 12th grade, your children can attend from anywhere in the world. American Heritage School will prepare your child for more than a job. It will prepare them for life. To learn more, visit American-Heritage.org. That's American-Heritage.org.
Welcome back. To get on the show, call us on James's Dime at 1-866-986-6397.
All right, before we wrap up our first hour, if you're tuning in to hear Mark Weber or Lana Lochtiff, they are still coming, so stay tuned for that.
And don't forget Gerald Martin.
Oh, Gerald will be with us from the Amren Conference as well. We've got our eyes and ears on the ground there, and they're going to tell us what's going on. That's coming up in the third hour. I'm hearing some wild reports from Amren. I know that there were some arrests earlier in the day, all Antifa, of course, not the law-abiding citizens that are actually there for the conference, but the rabble, a few of them were arrested. I believe at least one was injured by the Tennessee Cavalry up there, the officers on horseback. I think one got kicked by a horse, maybe.
And Antifa has decided that they're going to have that horse prosecuted for the murder and the death penalty, if possible.
Well, I don't think the horse killed the person, but in any event.
But anyway, he's being charged with a hate crime.
Hearing reports now from a couple of different sources. The text messages here on my phone are going off. Antifa apparently were attacking cars zombie style, and you've seen the zombie shows, right, where you're driving in a car and the zombies just throw themselves on the hood and on the trunk and on the
Charlottesville, by the way. That's what they did there.
Well, I think it was a little bit different maybe in Charlottesville, but these people were voluntarily jumping on the cars, and allegedly. So we're going to find out what's going on when we talk to people. People always ask, well, why aren't you at Amren? I've typically only gone on the years that I have been a speaker there. Now my wife and I stopped by there last year on a Friday night to work the crowd a little bit. A lot of people up there wanted to meet us or meet me. But the thing is, the reception there is so bad. The internet is so bad at that state park that it's very difficult to broadcast. And so with us having a show on Saturday evenings,
If you want to get away from your cell phone, go to Montgomery Bell State Park, and you will not be troubled with cell phone calls.
We have done a lot of remote broadcasts from a lot of conferences. The CFCC, we used to do remote broadcasts there every year, but this state park just doesn't have that sort of power with regard to the Wi-Fi.
That's probably the only reason why we are allowed to, people like us are allowed to have a conference there.
That is the biggest reason why I don't make Amren, unless it's a year that I'm speaking there, and I've spoken there a couple of times. But that's the reason. So that's why I'm not there. But we do send emissaries. I know Keith has gone and as an emissary of the show in many years. We've got some people up there that are going to be reporting in. So that's just how we have to do it with us having a broadcast on a Saturday night. Anyway, so that's all still coming up. Mark Weber and then Lana Lochtiff. And that's coming up in the second and third hour. Stay tuned. But first, just again, very quickly, Keith, I want to talk about the reparations that some so-called Native Americans are getting up in the Seattle area. But 2 or 3 minutes to wrap up the Brown versus Board and the situation with the SATs. I mean, you have, I think as somebody put it, and this is a pretty interesting on, again, on Twitter, if I see something on there that I like, I mark it on. Keith, you know we have a no cell phone policy here in the studio.
Okay.
Well, what they were saying was the problem nobody's talking about. Rich people will buy their kids a spot in college. These people will get in based on so-called adversity. What happens to middle-class whites?
Well, that's exactly it. Basically, white people, as white people, are the only group that is being frozen out altogether. If you're a white person, again, and you bring up the pay-for-play scandal that came out with Felicity Huffman and
we had a great hour on that, by the way, me, you, and Bill Johnson a month or two ago.
Well, basically, if you are a white Gentile, the only way that you're going to get into a place like Harvard, Yale, Stanford, University of Chicago, et cetera, ad nauseum, is if you are the dim-witted progeny of a movie star or some ultra-rich person like Jared Kushner's father, Charles. And they can pay millions of dollars, then they will let those people go in and take credit for diversity. Yeah, white Gentiles can get in. Of course they can. If they pay $10 million, if they pay $2.5 million in the case of Jared Kushner, to get their kids in. Meanwhile, the kid with a 200 IQ from Iowa or from Tennessee, whose father is a middle manager somewhere.
You're going to go to Southwest Community College.
Yeah, that's right. Southwest Tennessee Coco or something like that, or Dixie Junior College or something like that in Utah. In other words, basically, you're frozen out of the action. You're not going to be credentialed so that you could get a job like Paul Wolfowitz is or Douglas Feith or somebody like this, you're not going to be a Washington insider. You're going to be on the outside where they say that you belong. Our country is being hijacked from the founding stock
well,
of America.
Now, you
that,
may.
This is how it's happening.
There are obviously white middle class kids in college. You may get into college if you take out those student loans, and you may get in if there's
But you're not going to get into Harvard, Yale, and all these places whose credentials are necessary for you to be in the top tier of government and business. You're going to be able to get an education overpriced, and which is diluted so that you're not really getting good information unless you're in STEM courses, unless you're in math or the hard sciences. Basically, you're going to be propagandized.
Well, I saw some propaganda this week. Well, we don't have time to. Well, I see it every week, but we're going to run out of time to get to the story. But no, I mean, here's the thing. I mean, they can get in, but you better hope that there's not somebody richer that can pay for it, or there's not an adversity American.
You show me the person from Iowa whose father was a middle manager who is getting into places like Harvard and Yale now, and I'll eat your hat. It just doesn't happen.
Well,
they're
not going to Harvard. They might get into University of Memphis or something.
Well, they can do that. But then on the other hand, if you go to the University of Memphis, I don't care if you have a 200 IQ.
I think there was actually a lawsuit brought about by Asian Americans this week, or recently, maybe not this week, but recently, saying that Jews are overrepresented at Harvard and they can't get in even though they have the highest scores.
And, of course, this is a Jewish-run charity that is running this. It's Edward Bloom with the Students for Fair Admissions or something is the name of the group. You know, they own both sides of each coin. But, again, where is the champion for white Gentiles? Nowhere to be found. The silence is deafening. The crickets are chirping, okay?
Right here. Well, all right, here's what we got with just a couple of minutes remaining. Here's another one of those stories, you know. I'm just reading the headline, and so I'm going to read it in their politically correct verbiage. A Native American tribe gets rent as reparations in Seattle. Now, what you've got here is a collection of people that claim to be Indians, and they claim to come from some obscure tribe that no one's ever heard of. The Duwamish tribe says the United States never made good on an 1855 treaty covering land that is now in Seattle. So here's what's happening. Elite white socialites are voluntarily paying their rent and mortgages for them. So this is madness. I mean, this pathological altruism that has infected Europeans has got to be cured. But so you've got these rich white people who couldn't care less about their own existence and their own progeny and their own ancestors. But you got these people who claim to be Indians and claim to have been mistreated 200 years ago. And so now they're putting a pool together and they're going to pay their rent.
Well, look, let me make a slight correction. They do care about their own progeny, but they don't care a whit about other white people, other white Gentiles. They are the people who are destined to be the new outcasts of America. Our nation is being hijacked out from under us, folks. Wake up and smell the coffee.
Well, when's the last time a group of rich white socialites put together a pool for the Appalachian? Scholarship.
Never. This is right out of Tom Wolfe's Radical Chic. You know, Leonard Bernstein's fundraiser in his Upper West Side apartment for the Black Panthers. And the Black Panthers come in, vilify him, slander him, treat him like dirt, but nothing stops. The only thing that will stop is if they move those people into the Leonard Bernstein or his contemporary equivalent here in America, into their apartment building, and they start threatening their safety. That's the only way that there'll be a change in attitude by the elites.
All right. That basically wraps up the news of the week that I was interested in focusing on. We typically, I think, spend the first hour talking about current events and items that are in the news any given week. And then the second and third hour, we go on to guests and other matters. But yes, so indeed, Mark Weber is up next in the second hour. He just got home, just fresh off the plane from a 2-week trip to Vienna, Austria.
So we have the jet lag Mark Weber here to provide us with insights into what's happening in Mother Europe.
I like doing shows like this when somebody is either in Europe or has just gotten back from Europe, so they can just tell us what they observed and saw and learned, and that's what he's in fact going to do. So we're going to find out, what he observed and learned, in fact, when Mark Weber joins us in the second hour. And then in the third hour, We're going to get our live look in. We are going to go live to the American Renaissance Conference, which will be smack dab in the middle of their keynote speaker and dinner banquet at 8 o'clock tonight in the third hour. Lana Lochtiff will be on. And I want to hear more about this zombie attack on the car.
Well, I want to find out about this Nazi horse that attacked an Antifa person.
You know, you learn this in the South. You don't stand behind a horse. You just don't do it. A horse can only kick one way, and that's with its back
don't
feet.
Don't rub a mule's hind leg. That's we all learned that as children
tell
out
you
on the
what,
farm.
You know, I'm a city boy, but I spent enough time in the rural South at my, you know, visiting my great grandparents' farm and things like that. I knew very early on you don't stand behind a horse
or a mule.
But the Tennessee cavalry doesn't ride mules, so that's what was up there.
Well, the thing is, if that happens, if that type of natural reaction comes forth, Nazis and Klansmen are somehow behind it. That's all.
Well, you go on the Antifa Twitter feeds, and they're screaming bloody murder about their comrades being arrested and forcibly arrested. I mean, it's probably all BS and exaggerations, but I do imagine that one of them may have gotten moderately roughed up by a horse. If you get too close to a horse, you stand behind a horse, you know, stuff happens. And I can guarantee you they weren't standing behind the horse to come talk politely to the officer or to pet the horse.
No, they may have been sexually assaulting the horse.
We'll find out. Maybe Lana can tell us. We'll be back with Mark Weber next.
Another hour of the political cesspool is in the can, but don't go away. There's more to come right here on the Liberty News Radio Network.